there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 339, the 339th edition here at the Caffeination Podcast. We're calling this one the Games Edition here. Hopefully you're having a good week. Hopefully you're having a great time at whatever it is that you're currently doing. We have a ton of news, but that's not different than normal. But what is different is we're not going to be putting links up to absolutely everything we're talking about today. There's going to be a couple little discussion items that we're just going to kind of run down. I'm going to give you my opinion on different things that are happening in the game industry, because that's what the show is titled after. Primarily because E3 is happening this week. It's the Entertainment Expo. It's the used to be the massive, huge booth babe inhabited landscape where all the big video game companies came out and plied their wares and announced all the cool new things. They tried to scale it back down, and they kind of figured out that as they scaled it back down, it kind of lost its relevance. People really didn't understand the hype anymore, and they're like, okay, they moved away from it. And at one point in time, I think they said they had somewhere around 400,000 people, or that's an insanely high number. They had something, I think it was like 8,000 people show up, and this year it was like significantly fewer or something. Like, I don't know, my numbers are all messed up, but it used to be incredibly popular, and now not so much. So they're trying to open it back up to the public again this year. So you get a lot of different reporting. There's a lot of new and innovative things that have happened. So we're going to give you our best take on it and do our best job to kind of explain the different things that are coming down the pike. But that's not the only thing that I came to talk to you about here today. We have a ton of other good stuff. There's some lawnmower things in there for all of those of you out there who have lawn. Big, little, whatever. We have an interesting little topic called the caffeine nap we're going to talk to you about. I think I've talked about it before, but just have a couple other different little things we're going to hit you up for. And then there's trending topics, you know, caffeine gum and kids and a whole bunch of other fun stuff. So we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. If you are currently looking for this podcast is lovingly nestled over, along with all of its episodic friends, at www.caffination.com. You can email me comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail at caffination@gmail.com, or you can get into contact with me at any one of a number of different ways. If you head on over to the website, they will all be revealed in front of you. All right, it's kind of weird. I'm still out on the leave after the surgery, so things are getting slowly done around the house here. The problem with cleaning the lair is that I need to lift things and I can't, so it's kind of mind-numbing to try and do the different little things. It's not mind-numbing, it's kind of irritating, let's just put it that way, because I want to do everything, I just know that I can't because I'll hurt myself. there's a lot of fun little topics that we're going to hopefully unravel for you. But before we do that, we would like to talk to you just a little bit about the sponsor for today's show. Today's show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. Now, we've talked to you recently about a couple different things about the software, the seamless integration between the different presenters, the affordability and the ease of use of it, and now I'm going to talk to you about something that you might not understand at first. When you have something that's incredibly visual, now I deal in a realm in work. I work in the architecture department. People are trying to produce visual ideas and share them amongst each other. So we work entirely in the realm of presentations. It is incredibly hard to tell somebody what something looks like if it's not sitting in front of them. Trust me, I run a podcast. I know. If I just did a screencast of everything that I'm looking at, it wouldn't be nearly as entertaining, I think. And at the same point in time, it wouldn't be nearly as informative. But if you're talking about cold, hard facts, the things that people need to know, there's certain things that happen that you need to be able to showcase. You need to be able to tell your clients and business partners, okay, this is exactly what the pie chart looks like, or this is what the product's going to look like. Because no amount of describing something is going to do that. So GoToMeeting allows you to seamlessly share your desktop and share it across multiple different people and do it seamlessly. It's unbelievable. I really have to tell you. If you've never tried it, you owe it to yourself to give it a shot. You too can try GoToMeeting free for 30 days, but you must visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts. That's www.GoToMeeting.com/tech podcasts for a free 30-day trial. I'd like to thank GoToMeeting for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast. They allow us to do all kinds of fun and interesting things. Hopefully, you will head on over there and give them a shot. All right, we're going to dive on into the rest of this program. There is a... I keep saying there's a ton, and there really is a ton. We actually have a couple little articles that we wrote that are going to head off the thing. The first up here, I am ecstatic to announce that the Web Trend Map from Information Architects has been released. Now, if you are unfamiliar with this, you need to head on over and read my little article, then head on over and actually see what I'm talking about. But the fine folks over at InformationArchitects.jp have been doing a yearly trend map of the top 333 different places and spaces online. So it's Google, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, IBM, all these different little things. And it goes everywhere from the popularity, their presence online, to the brand forecast. How people see them, what's working, what isn't. And it's all from a design firm. So it's a different take on it. And what they do is they map all of it onto the Tokyo subway system. It is unbelievable. The beautiful nature of what it turns out to be. So I'm excited because they've reworked it for 2009. Gone is the white background, in's a dark black background. So I cannot wait to get back to work and print this thing out. But if you would like your very own copy, then you can head on over there and get the professionally printed ones. They're $49 shipped to you. They are worth every penny. If you have a nice big size printer you'd like to print one out, you can head on over, and they actually share the whole thing up on Flickr because they're just that cool. It's really, really neat to actually see how detailed this thing gets down to. On this one, they actually have a couple different things. For instance, there's a bunch of little people that are actually sitting on there that are different people that are players in the game, and they actually put the different players in the game on the different routes that they actually inhabit. So there's trend lines. There's a whole bunch of other different little stations that are out there. They have Google, Yahoo, MSN, Apple, Wikipedia. The top 50 are all ranked there for your viewing enjoyment. They have a couple different lines: the application line, publishing line, opinion, news, identity, creativity, money, broadcasting, knowledge, advertisement, sharing, entertainment, and filter. So it's kind of cool to see all these different little things all put together, and it's rather inspiring at the same point in time. So just wanted to share the link. Hopefully you too can head on over there and get a little bit inspired. And I also talk a little bit about one of my other favorite projects that's out there called the Opti.org thing. The only sad thing about Opti is that it has not been updated in several years. I really kind of wish the guy would come back and produce a new one, because the last map that they have up there that's full and complete is from 2003. It's a map of the internet in one day. So it's all well and good for 2003, but the internet's a lot denser now. It's going to be different. It's going to be cool and interesting to see how things have shifted since then. So I really would like to see exactly what happened. But I know he put the source code up there, so if there's any enterprising code hackers out there, you're more than welcome to give it a shot. I don't know if he put the final source code for the new version that he was working on, but hey, it's all interesting and up there in case you're interested to take a look. All right, next little thing we have for you here is another little article that I've been working on for a little while. Was actually kind of sparked by a comment that I received from Chuck on a couple episodes ago about Windows 7 and Dropbox. Or not Windows 7, Windows Vista and Dropbox. Chuck was having a pretty hard time trying to get Windows Vista to use Dropbox, and it got me thinking that a lot of people are really down on Vista, and a lot of them have very valid reasons, but it's not necessarily Microsoft's fault, at least the way that I see it. I mean, it could entirely be their fault, but I just wanted to kind of push through a couple ideas for why I thought that Windows 7 is going to actually do really, really well, and I think that Vista kind of fell flat. And it's primarily because of the Windows 7 has an easier migration path for sloppy coding from Windows XP. When Windows XP was out, when it first came out, there wasn't really a focus on security, let's just say. Microsoft kind of revamped the entire, they did revamp the entire software design process in-house from the ground up. And from sitting in technical lectures by Microsoft people from in work, it's unbelievable the amount of stuff that they had to literally throw out the window and stop working on entirely just because it didn't meet the new product development cycle. So I give you a little bit of insight into that. Hopefully you enjoy that. All right, now the next little thing we have up for you here, we're going into the video game rundown here. A little bit of discussion, not just all links this time. The first thing that's up there is Taken My Breath Away. This is a video link. This might go dead, but if it doesn't, you need to search for Xbox 360 Project Natal. I think it's pronounced like Femme Natal, but it is unbelievably beautiful and really cool at the same point in time. I would hesitate to say, but I think Microsoft is becoming the Apple of video games. And you're going to have to stay with me here, because I think that the Wii had one really good idea. They ran with it and they really kind of took off. But I think overall the Xbox 360 is going to show that it has a lot more innovation behind it, and there's a lot more interconnectivity that's really going to shine. And I think Microsoft's starting to approach it as a digital lifestyle more through the Xbox 360 than they ever have before. And this is really kind of going to showcase that. But this is a special dual-featured camera. There's two cameras here. One's an infrared camera on the motion sensor, and the other one's a regular RGB camera. The infrared actually allows them to sense depth. And the idea behind it is that it has all kinds of crazy software running behind it. It has facial recognition, voice recognition. So if you watch the first video that I put up there, it's literally just a long commercial for it. And the tagline for this is, the only experience you need is life experience. Whereas the Nintendo Wii has the sensor bar and the Wiimote, and the new Sony thing that came out, or they debuted at E3, is actually this crazy looking motion capture that involves the camera, which I think is the PlayStation iToy, and their own Sony looking Wiimote, which is like a red black stick with a red ball on the end of it. It looks like that one has a little bit better motion capture than the original Wiimotes, but we're going to get to how the Wii was upgraded in a second. But the Natal project really is out of the box, because it doesn't use any controllers. There's not going to be any accessories with it. It's just this little camera that sits there right under your TV. As long as it can get a good view of the room, you don't have to worry about it. They said it works in any lighting conditions. The cool thing about it is that there's a lot of different industry executives and industry people who've come in and actually been given a kind of black box demo of it, where they weren't allowed to take any pictures, they weren't allowed to do anything like that, because they weren't using a production-looking unit. The unit didn't look as attractive as it's eventually going to look. It looked kind of like a hacked-together box. But the software was in an advanced stage, let's just say. So They did what I said Nintendo should have done months or years ago. There's somebody known as the Wii Hacker, a gentleman who works for or who used to work for either Carnegie Mellon or MIT. I think it was Carnegie Mellon, and he did fascinating, unbelievable things with the Nintendo Wiimote by switching the things around. He had the infrared sensor on the TV, and he had the infrared LEDs, which are usually on the sensor bar, on a headband and stuff like that. He was doing head tracking, which is basically the closer to the screen you get, the different viewport changed on the screen, so it actually looked like you were trying to look through a window. So if you moved left, you got to see more of the stuff that was on the right side of the window that wasn't there before. If you moved right, you got to see more of the stuff on the left. He did really kind of groundbreaking work, and I said back when his stuff started coming out, Nintendo would be fools not to attempt to hire this man. Microsoft did hire this guy, and he's just one of the many cogs that have gone into actually shaping this project. But it kind of gives you a peek into the level of creativity that really bring into it. I really can't explain it much more, except for the fact that it does total body control. So it doesn't matter if you don't know how to play soccer and you just kind of wail away at the ball. Your character on the screen is going to just wail away at the ball. It's kind of opening up a whole new genre of action gaming, where you don't need to have the tiny little things. They actually have a driving game where you just pretend that you're holding a steering wheel, and you, as you move it back and forth, you turn the car. You can move your foot forward for gas, back for brake. It's crazy. They said it's relatively easy to incorporate the controls into older games, so you could have older games patched. Could you imagine playing Soul Calibur or something like that, where you could just fight and see how bad your character could do up against somebody who actually knew moves? And I just think it would be kind of interesting to see where this could go. But I think this is going to open up a whole new realm of gaming, kind of like the Nintendo Wii originally did. Now, the problem with when you open up a whole new realm of gaming like this, like the Nintendo Wii did with their controllers, is that not a lot of software developers actually understand how to use it. That's why if you have a Nintendo Wii, there's probably very few games that you truly enjoy how the controller interacts. I mean, I think there's a couple out there that are relatively good. Like, I really like Raving Rabbits because a lot of the little mini games that are in there kind of understand how the Wiimote is supposed to act in space and kind of understand the limitations of the previous technology, and they go forward with that. But then there's others like Super Mario Brothers. I think the one we had was Galaxy, where it just feels kind of thrown in there. Like, you could do everything that you're doing in the game with a normal controller and not lose anything. In fact, it might be a little bit more enjoyable to do it that way. So, I don't know. There are a couple other things that came out at E3 so far. Yet more accessories. Yes, you're going to need a closet just to hold all the extra video game stuff that's out there. But Tony Hawk knows skateboards. That's one thing the man does know. And what was the one phrase I heard? He has forgotten more skateboard tricks than most pros actually know. So when you're looking at this system, it looks like a kind of a goofy-looking skateboard, which it really is. There's all the controls right actually on the side, but it's kind of unsteady. It has a rounded bottom so that it kind of gives you the same kind of feel that you would have if you're using it on carpet, which I think is what they suggest. It would give you the same kind of feel as if you are actually on a skateboard that had the trucks that were loose and could move back and forth. You actually use a good bit of your stabilizer muscles and everything. There's a bunch of videos that are up there of actually a lot of the different game industry people attempting to try this thing and falling all over the place, so it's hilarious. So I really think this is cool. I like the idea. I think I didn't put a link up to this because I thought it was really bad, but the DJ Hero, the thing that we've talked about on a couple of different episodes, which is actually a turntable and a bunch of different buttons that allow you to remix, they actually have a jam session between the Guitar Hero guitar, the DJ Hero DJ turntable, and they were doing like a remix of the Beastie Boys song Sabotage. The remix was pretty shoddy. It sounded pretty bad. I mean, I enjoy a good remix every now and then, but this was pretty poor, and just the controls and the way that it actually seemed to integrate didn't really seem to add anything to the genre. In fact, it really kind of seemed a little bit forced. I think where this thing's actually going to shine is in the ability to add extra samples in, but then of course the RIAA and all those people are probably going to jam their thumbs in there, and it's just not going to be fun for anybody. Alright, moving right along, the Wii has debuted a couple new little things that are out there. They're talking about a pulse tracker, something that you would actually wear to track how many calories you've burned. So there'd be an addition to whatever you have now that you can actually wear on your finger or something like that, where it'd actually be able to help you count your calories, which is pretty interesting and cool. But they've also debuted a new version of the Wii Fit game, which, the more I'm looking at this, this looks really, really cool. But the thing is, we have a Wii Fit upstairs, and I like it. It's very enjoyable. But a lot of the games that they had in there, I don't really think they understood, because they didn't have a wide enough testing audience of what games they could make. So if you're looking at this new version of the Wii Fit game, you can buy it with the balance board and everything. So it's similar to the old one, but it seems like these are just games that are better using the control system that's there. So I'm really kind of looking forward to being able to pick this up whenever it debuts, because it has a bunch of little things that were sorely missing from the last ones. The last one, it had great yoga. I mean, you could go through and do a whole bunch of different yoga poses, and there were certain limitations that you kind of understood, but the interesting thing about it is there was no way to kind of chain any of the yoga together. With the new Wii Fit called Wii Fit Plus, you can actually chain a series of exercises or yoga moves together to actually create longer workouts. So if you wanted to do downward facing dog warrior pose and then, you know, like the chair pose or whatever you wanted to do right in a row, it would actually do it. And it kind of conducts the session for you to your predetermined length of time. And I really kind of like that. I think that that's much more along with what the spirit of the balance board could actually do. So there's also what they're saying is 15 new mini games like juggling and a whole bunch of other stuff. So that's going to be interesting to see where that ends up going. And there's just like a lot of really cool new games that are actually coming out. So if you get a chance, you should probably head on, just look for different trailers for the new Mario Brothers game. I think this is where they're starting to understand. It's called Super Mario Brothers Wii. They're starting to understand how people are playing together, and there's a lot more party atmosphere involved with the Wii. So they actually have a platformer where you can play with four characters simultaneously, all attempting to do different things to get through the level. So it's Mario can stand on top of Luigi's shoulders, controlled by different people. I mean, this is pretty cool stuff. So, just giving you that big shout out for that coming, if in case you're interested. All right, we're pretty much done with the video game rundown. There is one more little video game story, but we're not going to get there yet. Philly is bringing in solar-powered trash cans to save money. When I first heard the title of the story, I was like, this is pretty weird. I mean, why would you need a solar-powered trash can? They're relatively off-the-grid kind of things. Maybe, you know, maybe they were powering streetlights or something like that, and there was a larger area on top of the trash can, so it was able to collect more energy. No. As one comic I've recently been listening to, John Panette, says, nay. What they're actually doing is these are mini little trash compactors. They're called Big Bellies, and the idea behind them is that each one, instead of being emptied, they're saying, instead of being emptied like 19 times a week, these things only have to be emptied 5. So they're actually able to reduce the staff that actually deals with them. They also have the capability of actually contacting people when they're full. So if you have one trash can that's not getting any use, then they're not going to end up using them. Philadelphia is installing 500 of these units all around Center City by July, which is really kind of cool. And they're saying that they're going to be able to reduce the overall service load on the sanitation crew, which is great. And at the same point in time, they're also introducing a bunch of little buddy green kiosks that go along with them that actually allow you to recycle things too. I'm not sure exactly what they allow to recycle. The only sad thing about the article is they said that Philadelphia is not the only city with a Big Belly. These machines are also popping up in Drexel University and the University of Pennsylvania, Chicago's Millennium Park, and Boston's Fenway Park. Okay, the first two things that they mentioned there are part of Philadelphia. Drexel University and the University of Pennsylvania are both inside of Philadelphia, so they kind of that was not really moving the point. But Chicago's Millennium Park and Boston's Fenway Park, that's really kind of cool. It's going to be interesting to see how far this thing spreads. I'm pretty sure it's going to be in most of the touristy destinations, so I'm not really sure if I'll see anything up where I live. But it's just wanted to pass it along because I thought it was pretty awesome. And the next little thing we have up for you here is they found a way to keep a heart beating outside of the body. So we are no longer needed. So in case, you know, it's just kind of freaky. The video alone is enough to make you kind of step back and say, wow, that's fascinating, at the same time really kind of creepy. If this thing goes into production, a much smaller, you know, more attractive version of it, the fine folks at North Carolina State are the ones who figured the way out of doing this out. You're not going to see any more of those fun stories like with Mr. Bean in the movie Rat Race, where he was trying to take the heart to the transplant patient. It's going to be, you know, there's no rush to time with that. You know, they can actually keep it beating along the way, which is going to be kind of cool to see how that works out. All right, next little thing that we have up for you here is a rechargeable lawnmower. Yeah, you heard it here. It's just pretty cool. I mean, there's no other way to say it, but I think we might have skipped. Yeah, we did skip one. We'll go back to it. The rechargeable lawnmower is actually pretty neat. I mean, I guess I never see that this is a big problem because I have a small enough lawn and that I can use an electric lawnmower and it's plugged in, and you know, one 25-foot extension cord is more than enough to actually reach from an outlet inside the house all the way to the back of the yard. I think that 25-foot might be stretching a little thin. I think I actually usually use the 50. I can't remember which color is which right now. But this is an interesting little thing called a Newton CE6 rechargeable lawnmower. It's capable of holding up to 360 watt-hours of juice that should be good for a third of an acre, roughly about an hour of grass cutting. So depending on how big your particular little patch of green is, you know, you can do as you will. It kind of makes me a little bit nostalgic, and I can't remember if my parents had this thing at all. We used to have a Scott's push mower that had bad blades, and it was really kind of hard to push around. I have to see if my parents still have it, because if they do, I'd like to try and see if I could fix it up, because they're becoming all the rage again, and I'm frankly tired of pulling the electric mower out to kind of have it, you know, tear the grass up. So I wonder if we still have it, and if not, you know, it's a lot more ecologically sound to actually use one of the push mowers. So going to be kind of interesting to see how many people start moving towards that. All right, the story that we missed that we're going to be moving around in the show notes is a beautiful, absolutely beautiful laptop from Maker Faire 2009. It's a steampunk-styled laptop. They've replaced all the keys. They didn't replace all the keys. These are two separate little things here. There's actually a steampunk keyboard and a steampunk laptop. The steampunk keyboard looks exactly like a typewriter, which is really really kind of cool. And the steampunk laptop, it has this beautiful bezel on the back of it that has all of these incredibly tiny, intricate little gears that are all brass and ornate, and they're moving around, I hope. And there's an interesting little key fob that's on the inside, and there's like little leather padded wrist rest for sitting there. This thing will only do itself justice if somehow that key fob turns when the laptop's working. I think that would be really cool if they could somehow, you know, take one of the motorized USB gadgets and rewire it into actually making the little key turn like a gear or something like that as the laptop actually runs. So I thought that was pretty cool. Wanted to pass it along. Next little thing we have up for here is Nintendo in a shoe. Yeah, some fine folks have figured a way of putting a Nintendo Entertainment System, the original Famicom, into a shoe. I don't know whatever you could say about that, except for the fact, you know, the power and the reset button are up on the front. It is a right shoe. It's kind of a flat-bottomed, like, airwalk style, but it is a Nike. And it's playing Super Mario Brothers. So there you go, and you can head on over there and check that out. It's pretty interesting. And the last little thing, or the last two little things that we have for you here today is one's a design concept that I would love to see. It's called the Color Picker Pen. It involves two sides of a pen. The back end is a color scanner, so all it does is it's a little lens that you put up against something and it picks the color out. And then the other side is a three-inked pen. So it's red, green, and blue. And what the back-end scanner does is pick which values of red, green, and blue are actually present to create the color that you're looking for. And then the front end of the pen actually colors in that color. The only thing that's missing is the red, green, and blue are great, except that they're the three primary colors of light. And you can't draw in green ink. It just doesn't work that way. You would have to have a red, yellow, or a cyan, magenta, and cyan, magenta, and yellow with a black component to actually give you the components. So it would be like a mini inkjet printer. So it's a little bit of a shift from how they had. They said it was an RGB ink cartridge. That's a one small little problem with it. There's no way to actually print anything physical because the three primary colors of pigment are cyan, magenta, and yellow because they're additive. It allows it to add to being a color. Whereas with light, it's actually subtractive. The more colors of light you throw into the mix, the closer to white you get. So it's a little bit of color theory there, but a really fascinating look at a different kind of cool pen. All right, and the next little thing we have for you here is over at randomgoodstuff.com. Two awesome magic pens, or as I like to call them, secret agent pens. The first thing is temperature sensitive ink. So you draw your little gizmo, and when the thing's heated up, it disappears. When it's cold, it reappears. So I think that's pretty kind of cool. And then the next little thing that they have up for you there is a KGB disappearing ink. I have no clue how this works, but this is not the normal kind of invisible ink where you draw on it and then there's actual residue on the page. They're saying this is real KGB kind of stuff. They're saying a couple seconds after you write, like 10 to 15 seconds after you write, the ink is completely gone from the paper. So that's just unbelievable. I can't imagine that something like that actually exists. But hey, you know what? It's actually true. It's only $15 and it's over at ThinkGeek. So I thought it was pretty cool and wanted to pass it along. All right, that about wraps up the Geek Corrupt section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We're going to give you a quick rundown of the couple little stories that are making their circulation in the caffeinated and food bits. A lot of caffeinated news running around. The first thing up there is the caffeinated nap, or the caffeine nap. It's a new thing that's coming out, or not new. The idea behind this thing is that you take two systems into account. One, you take your digestive system, and the other one, that you take your sleep system into account. So they're saying that people feel really rested when they have what's called a powered nap. It's from 15 to 20 minutes long. No longer, because then you enter REM sleep, and by the time you wake up after that, you're not feeling refreshed because your body's doing other things. I'm not really sure how sleep works, and people who understand how it works, you know that it kind of works in cycles, and if you wake up during the wrong end to your cycle, you can kind of throw the whole ball of wax off. The other thing that's at work here is your digestive system, and it takes a certain amount of time to metabolize anything you eat. So what they're saying is if you drink a cup of coffee or a caffeinated beverage, and then you go immediately to sleep, that's provided that you can go immediately to sleep during the middle of the day. By the time you wake up from your power nap, the caffeine will have started to kick in, and you are incredibly awake. You're incredibly ready to actually enter into the fight for the afternoon. So I would love to try this. I'm just not sure about the policy at most companies right now for actually letting people nap during lunch. I'm not really sure if there is a policy, and given the current economic climate, I really don't want to kind of play around and ask around that. So how do you feel about sleeping on the job? Are you pro or con that? It just doesn't really seem like something that you would be able to approach your boss with still receiving good results right now. All right, trending topic. This is another thing I'm going to start to do. When I start to see tons and tons of articles about something, I'm going to let you know that it's a trending topic, which is a fancy way of saying that a lot of people are talking about this. Caffeinated gum, there's being a warning issued for kids. You shouldn't give kids caffeinated gum. There's a big duh that's waiting here, and I'm just wondering when common sense is actually going to kick into the collective consciousness here. But the big problem is, apparently one tiny little boy, a 13-year-old little man, was hospitalized after displaying what they call as quote-unquote unusually aggressive behavior, agitation, abdominal discomfort, painful and prickly sensation in his legs, and rapid heartbeat and breathing and raised blood pressure. The thing was, he ate 2 packs of energy gum, which means he consumed approximately 320 milligrams of caffeine in a very short amount of time. They're saying you actually, according to the article, caffeine intoxication is said to occur after the consumption of 250 milligrams of caffeine in a 4-hour period. I think it's a little bit higher than that, but still, if you're 13 years old, you shouldn't have caffeinated gum. That's a common sense thing. You're young. You shouldn't need the energy. You know what I mean? They're saying the use of stimulant chewing gum should be considered in the case of caffeine intoxication, probably because it's a lot quicker to get it into the bloodstream because it's just, you know, being issued raw, in raw form at that point. It's not really, it's meant to deliver the caffeine. Whereas if you were drinking a cup of coffee, you still have to try to digest it and metabolize it. This way, the caffeine's actually getting absorbed through the skin in your mouth, so it's kind of freaky. All right, now, given the current economic climate, I'm wondering how many people out there have the need for an $800 water filter. I know I'm not raising my hand right now, despite the fact that it looks like a strange version of a snowman. This giant 11-liter ceramic filter system is completely green, according to them. It's a multi-layer aqua crystal filter cartridge that is reusable, so basically you can rinse the whole thing out. Except whenever anybody says that you could rinse out a water filter, I get kind of confused because I'm like, wait a minute, so you're going to run dirty water, or what you would consider dirty pollutant chemical-filled water, through it to try and clean it out? How does that make sense at all? I'm not really sure, but they're saying it's an active, and then it's also a replaceable activated carbon layer, neutralized taste and smell, and it absorbs 99% of the pharmaceutical residues, phenols, and other nasty elements. You know what? I'm pretty sure if you're really that kind of hard up for clean water, a Brita water filter is a little bit better of a choice for you. But $800. Who has that kind of scratch laying around right now? All right, next little thing we have up for you here. I just think this is pretty cool. Beer ants. No, they don't get loaded while they work, but this is a ant farm that has, instead of the blue clear gel that's coming around, it actually has yellow gel, and there's a lovely little terrarium that's shaped like a beer mug. So as the ants work and dig through the gel, they actually bring a whitish foam up to the top. So I just think it was pretty cool. It's $30 if you want to give it a shot. But other than that, there wasn't too much stuff going around. The biggest trending topic was that caffeinated gum thing. I swear, I have a Google alert set up for caffeine and a couple other different things, and it was kind of scary how many times that one caffeinated gum story kept coming up over and over and over again. So I just wanted to kind of let you know that it was hot. All right, that about wraps it up here today. There's a lot of cool stuff that we're working on here. I'm working on reviews of a new espresso vodka, caffeinated water, and a whole bunch of different books that I got on the shelf that I've just finally gotten the chance to actually sit down and read. So they're all going to be firing your way over the next week or so. All right, thank you so much for listening. This has been Caffeination number 339. Huge, huge number. Every time I look at the numbers of the episodes now, it's like, you know, I remember doing episode 18 and saying, I can't imagine ever having three digits. I'm eventually going to have to add four if I keep this pace up, and not more than a couple years down the road. I think I'll have to have been doing the show 10 years to have that happen, but who knows what's going to happen. All right, so if you are looking for this podcast, it is there in all of its episodic glory, along with all of its little friends, over at www.caffination.com. Any comments, feedback, suggestion, you can either leave them under the episode over at the website, or you can email me direct at caffination@gmail.com. I'd like to thank everybody for listening, and stay caffeinated, people.